Welcome, everybody, to the JK Sports Podcast. I am Juan.
And I am Kyle.
And we are your favorite podcast.
We are the only podcast that matters.
Yes.
The one and only.
And I know you guys are feeling it. I can feel it through this. We're in a new location today. All right. Breaking ground at a new podcast location. And I just want to let everybody know our content is still going to be A+.
Well, we wouldn't be doing it unless it was A+.
Yeah. We wouldn't make these kind of changes without thinking of you and how this would impact the content.
Every decision made is for the listener.
I would wholeheartedly agree.
I base my life and my decision making around the listeners.
Yeah. I mean, when we started the JK Sports Podcast, it was a family decision. Like, it wasn't just us.
That's right.
Right? There was families involved and commitment and sacrifice. And yep. We said, once we do this, we're all in.
That's right.
Right? And everything we do from here on out is for the podcastees.
Right. The podcastites.
Yes, the podcastites.
Right. That's exactly right.
Right. So.
And we're out here. We're outside. We're with you. We're one of you this evening.
Yeah.
Or this morning, whenever you're listening.
Yeah. Listen, we put our pants on one leg at a time like you guys do.
That's right. Well, sometimes I just jump straight into them. But right. I get what you're saying.
We all do that.
Yeah.
Right. But just letting you know, a little bit changes, so we've been a little bit sporadic this year, right? But I think we're settling down. We're going to get our groove. It's summertime, June 30th.
Yep.
We're about to hit July.
Yep.
Right? And you know what's right around the corner? Football season.
That's right. We're getting close.
We're getting close. We're rounding out golf, right? We're right in the peak of golf season right now. So there's a lot there's a lot to get us going and keep us in our groove.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be these next 3 months. You know, July, August typically isn't what people would describe as a busy time of year for sports, but there's a lot going on, and I would say golf alone is going to keep us pretty busy for the next month. This past month has been wild. Absolutely wild. And not necessarily just from tournament play, but from storylines and changes to the all-around landscape.
Yeah. So let's get right into it, right? The biggest story that's happened since we've last podcasted has been the LIV Tour, right? It actually happened, right? The LIV Tour happened. It's up and going. They're in Tournament 2 now as we speak.
Pumpkin Ridge,
Portland.
That's right.
And it's going on. I mean, players have been suspended.
We're really doing this, Harry.
Yeah, players have been suspended. PGA is making their moves. We've had some time to kind of digest it now. So where are we on the LIV, Kyle? Where do you stand on the LIV Tour?
I don't know. I still think I'm just as confused as I was before. I'm still not 100% sure what the purpose, what we're going for here is. I don't know. I don't know what the end game is. And that's what there's so many unknowns, right? And there's so many different directions we can take this conversation, you know, but are they ever going to get official world golf rankings? Are they going to be able to play in all the majors? Are they going to be able to play in Ryder Cup? Are they, you know, there's so many unknowns. And until those become clear, I'm not sure how to feel about it. Because as far as I'm concerned, the tournaments themselves, I could not care less. They don't mean anything right now. I don't know why anybody would truly watch at this point. You're not watching the best golfers in the world. They're not playing for anything. I don't know what to think.
I watched a little bit of it. I think I've watched maybe a combined 15 minutes, maybe a max of 30 minutes of the first two tournaments. Coverage is decent. You know, it's on YouTube. There is zero commercials, zero ads, right? So it's pure golf, if you're into that, which is pretty sure. Cool, right? But of course you're going to have that because you have no sponsors.
Right.
So that it's not real golf. It's not real sports. Real sports, you're going to have sponsors that have it. Even college athletics take commercials and that because they have to pay their sponsors.
Right.
But it was somewhat intriguing this week when you were watching Brooks Koepka, DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson out there. I found myself wanting to watch a little bit more and being interested. A couple things that I liked, or I think that was interesting, is the shotgun start. Right? So they had a little ticker at the top of saying everybody has 13 holes left. Everybody has 5 holes left kind of thing. So that was pretty cool. I think if I go to the player's experience of just what I've read, it's a pretty awesome experience for the player and the caddy. Let's just say the whole tournament experience. And of course, you could say for the player because they have a guaranteed contract and they're making lots of money. But I say it more in the fact of, so the LIV Tour is paying for all the travel for a player and the hotel and wherever you stay. The other thing they do, though, that's unique is they pay for the caddies.
Right.
Of where they stay. So, you know, as far as experience, the caddies have been like, this is the nicest, you know, they put them in the hotel, like, this is the nicest hotel I've ever stayed at, you know, this year. Compared to the PGA Tour, because they're all just scraping by and
staying at Hampton Inns.
Staying at Hampton Inns and
right.
Doing whatever they have to do. So I've heard that positive from there. The AMAMs are a little bit different in the fact that they pair up two. Instead of one pro, three amateurs, it's two pros, two amateurs.
Right.
So that felt, I think, got some positive reviews from the players on there. And then just other small things of the team aspect they actually like, and they feel that it's a much more camaraderie on the tour, on the LIV Tour, that is. And I've read it a little bit of, you know, once you get to the these guys, most people have played college golf. And then after college, it's a whole team aspect. Then they get to the PGA Tour, and they said everybody's really out for themselves, and like nobody talks to anybody, because it's tough, the PGA Tour, and that's why it is the best. On one hand, it's the best because you don't know if you're going to keep your tour card. One day you could win a tournament, the next year you could just lose it.
Right.
Right. So everybody's super focused on themselves, super focused on this. Until you're one of the main guys, you're not really like, hey, let me help you out. Hey, how are you? Make you feel comfortable, team stuff. No, there's none of that. So I guess on the LIV Tour, and some of that is because of all the Saudi stuff and everything, but on the LIV Tour right now, they are talking about the positives of, yeah, we all do have guarantee, but now at least there's a team aspect, so there's a draft. And you're kind of rooting for each other, and you're all in this thing together, well, sort of thing. And I guess people are talking to each other more, the atmosphere, right, of people talking to each other more and players talking to each other more than they would in a regular PGA tournament. So from the players' experience, I've heard a lot of positive things. And ultimately, the money is good.
Well, yeah, obviously they're going to have – it's because it's going to be way more relaxed. It's them against the world right now. It's, 48, 54, however many golfers it is. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Against
48,
the world.
48 golfers, 54 holes.
48 golfers, 54 holes. So, yeah, and they've got teams, and it doesn't – there's no cut. So, yeah, you go out there, but you're going to get paid a ton of money no matter what. So why would you be stressed? Like, of course you're going to be having a good time and yucking it up with everybody. But that's, like, I don't know. Is that why we watch sports? Like, I don't know. That's not the culture that I want. I'm not opposed to teams in that aspect of it, but there needs to be some fear. And that's another one of the unknowns I was discussing earlier, is if you finish last in all 8 tournaments and you're Dustin Johnson or, you know, whom, it doesn't matter who you are. Phil, I mean, are you still on the tour next year? Like, is there relegation? Do they sub in? Like, there has to be some fear. There has to be some sense of earning your place there. Otherwise, what are we doing? And that's what I'm saying. It's not that, to be very clear, I'm not uber opposed to LIV. I'm not saying it's like the worst idea in the world and I hate it and I hate Saudis and all that. That's not what I'm saying. It's just, there's so many aspects to it that are just, it's just there. It's just like the exhibition tournaments is the best way of saying it. It truly is a bunch of exhibitions because there is zero meaning for all of them. There's just a ton of money for these guys to play in it. Do I blame them? No, of course not. I'm not saying if I were in their shoes, I'd probably do it too. But
are you saying it's too much of an unfinished product right now for you to watch?
Yes.
Like, you want, if you're going to watch something, you want it to be finished product. It's good. Like, it's defined. And this is what we're getting. Right? Like, they've clearly thought about this and that. This seems like we've thought about some of it, but the rest of it, we're still figuring it out.
Yeah. They're definitely, like, they're building the plane as they fly it. And, I mean,
which is crazy, because I think you would live your life more on your building the plane and flying it at the same time.
Yeah, to be clear, yes.
Well, but for sports, you want to watch that the plane's already been built.
See, here's the issue. The issue is not that they're figuring it out as they go. That's fine. But there's already a proven and successful model, right? So they've now split the game. And that's where the issue lies. Because, you know, for instance, take Phil, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, Phil's not a good example because he's older, but take DJ.
Yeah, or Brooks.
And DJ's never won the British Open, okay?
Okay.
So the British Open, there's qualifying for it, a top, you know, golfer in the world, certain qualifying aspects. So for the next 2 years, if LIV doesn't have world golf rankings and DJ doesn't play in any tournaments, he's not going to qualify for the British Open, right? Even if the British Open says, yeah, we're going to allow the LIV players, he's not going to qualify. He's out. He's out for the Ryder Cup right now. You know, it's just a bunch of money for him to put. So for me to watch him play against pretty poor competition, like, what's the driver there, right? There needs to be some sort of incentive. And if he finishes, again, to my point before, if he finishes last every week, has such a big payday by LIV, they're going to want him in there next year, the year after, as long as he's willing to play.
Yeah, so one thing I read about that counter and about the no incentives things, because of the team aspect and everything, is they were talking about maybe even doing a franchise and having owners, right?
Owners of what?
Of the teams. So, like, I think one of the teams is, like, there's a lot of dumb names, like the Aces. I think it's, like, Dustin Johnson's team's, like, the Aces. So, right. Like, let's just call the Aces, right? So, it's kind of, they're getting more to, like, an NFL, NBA team aspect there, where you are the Aces, you are the Yankees, right? You are a franchise. And so now you have an owner, and then they can cut, release you kind of thing, or trade players and do that. So they did talk about, I did read, they talked about doing some kind of that format eventually.
Well, but and they need to do that, though. They need to have consistent teams, because right now there is no consistency in teams.
It's a draft. I think they have the same captains.
It's not, because now Brooks was a captain this week. He didn't even play in the first week. And that's what I'm saying. There's just no, it's just there. They're literally just making it up as they go along. And it sucks because you have the PGA, like we're saying, in the prime right now. I mean, we're in major season. You know, we're going from the U.S. Open to the British, and this is the best golf of the year, and they've now taken, you know, some of those storylines and players away from that, and that's what I hate to see. I don't like that, and it's obviously a money thing, which is fine, but from a competition standpoint, it's totally screwing with that. And can we stop players talking about how you're doing this because of the schedule? That's the dumbest argument in the world, because in the PGA, you can make whatever schedule you want. You can play whenever you want. If you only want to play 8 times a year, you can play 8 times a year. Now, if you don't do well enough, you're not going to come back next year and play. Yeah. But you can play whenever you want on the PGA Tour. You make your schedule. The LIV, you only have 8 tourneys, but it's a set schedule, and they tell you when you're going to play. It's because you're getting paid oodles of money for the 8 tournaments. Why can't I need somebody to come out and say, I'm doing this because of the money. I need somebody to say that. Like, then I'd be like, yeah, okay, thank you. Like, we all respect your decision. Why can't anybody say that?
Yeah. Correct. I don't mind that it definitely is the money, number one, right? But there could be other reasons as well. And I think the schedule is one, because it is so, I think for some guys that already have already have the tour card and are not in jeopardy, right? They've won, I think you have to have 10 tournament wins and you have automatic status on the PGA, which is tough.
That's 10, a lot of wins.
10 wins, right?
That's a lot of wins. Not many people have that.
Correct. So, but even those people, it's all about like, it's kind of like, I need to play the FedEx because I need to get FedEx points, or else I'm not going to be in the FedEx Cup, right? Like, they just want to be in the FedEx Cup, right? They're like, why can't I be in the FedEx Cup? And to your point, it's like, well, play like more and do that, right?
Yeah.
But why couldn't the PGA somewhat relax that schedule, right, where you're not playing as much, correct? Because the players, the fans aren't watching every tournament, right? And the good players, it seems that it's this, right? You grind and it's almost like you have another minor league, right? You grind and you grind to win tournaments, win majors. Once you do that and have like full exemption in the PGA Tour card, in the PGA, then you start dialing it back.
Yes.
Right? And figuring out, all right, well, I don't want to do this. But until you've gotten most of the good players, we watch because of those people that have exemptions and have full PGA Tour cards. We're not watching because of the guys who need to play every single week. So it's a catch-22, right? There's a lot of people that we don't know that are fighting out there for, you know, Sam Howell, Charles Howell, right? A lot of people who are still fighting to get their PGA Tour card, but people aren't tuning in to watch them. They're tuning in to watch Tiger, DJ, Brooks, people who have their cards, JT, Rory, they're Scottie Scheffler, right? Well, and he's teeter-tottering, but like he's getting closer and closer to, you right. know, having full exemption. But you're watching for those guys, right? Like Scottie Scheffler is not carrying a broadcast or a tournament.
No, not there's very few golfers who do that. I mean, you could make the argument that currently playing right now, I mean, Tiger's his own.
Yeah.
That's its own animal, no pun intended. But, you know, you've got Phil, Rory, Spieth. That's probably it. I mean, that can, like, truly carry broadcast and tournaments. The problem is, if you don't have the quote unquote grind, then where there's no competition. You know, there somebody's always trying to take your spot in the PGA, and that's what's so awesome about it. We can think of somebody like Will Zalatoris, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all love watching him in the majors. He has yet to win, but he's awesome watching somebody like that. But he still's got to, I mean, he's got to grind it out, right? Like, there's no exemption there. There's no. He hasn't won anything yet. There's a lot of players like that, and a lot when of younger players now that there's this constant, like, you know, introduction to the Scotty Scheffler is a great example, you know, Zalatoris. There's always going to be turnover and introductions to new players. The LIV's not going to bring that to you. And I don't know if it becomes your quote unquote, the exemption status then goes on to LIV. Then you reach a status of, I've been so successful on this tour, now I'm going to go to the one where I make a bunch of money and I play against the elite of the elite a couple times a year. If we get to that, okay, then that kind of makes sense, but we're not even close to that yet. And if you look at the players in the LIV, it's horrific. It is so bad. Like, it's, I would venture to say 70% of the names you've never even heard of. And, you know, it's just, like, what's the fun in that? When they're guaranteed a spot the next week? Like, I don't know, man. I'm going to take a pass on it.
So, I guess I'll... My closing comments on it is this, right? Like, where you see it as, don't understand what they're doing, they're not really organized yet, and there's too many unknowns for this to be successful. What I see it is, they have struck first against the PGA and showed everybody or other people that they're vulnerable, right? They went to the biggest kid in prison in the schoolyard, right? And said, let's go, I'll fight you. Now, it's still, we don't know who won the fight yet, right? And granted, all odds are on the PGA and everything's still there. And you're like, whatever, they got a couple punches here and there. But they've shown that you're like, well, you know, they're not as big and tough as we think they are. And they've got open spots that we can go attack, right? And I think all the pressure is on the PGA. And from what I'm seeing more and more, they're still not, I still don't think they get it. And they're not I guess they're not responding well. I don't know what the right answer is, though, so I don't want to say that, you know, oh, this is what I would do to fix it or anything, right? But I like the LIV because I'm interested to watch what's going to happen, whether it's LIV or whether it's somebody else that takes down the PGA or partners with the, you know, it's like a business, right? It's like Elon Musk starting off with Tesla and Ford and them being like, this guy's not going to do anything. And he fails, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, wait a minute, now he's kind of serious, right? I don't know if it's going to be him. I don't know if it's going to be somebody else. But it's shown that they can, there's spots available there, and that the PGA has been not as forefront with money, right? Players... There's opportunity for players to get paid more money. Phil said this a while ago, although his numbers were ridiculous, right? Of saying that the PGA has like $800 million in reserve.
Right.
Right. Now, PGA came out and said, we're going to do $820 million tournaments. Well, total combined was $120 million.
Right. Right.
Or 160, excuse me, because it was $20 million, $820 million
tournament. Yeah.
So that's $160 million that they're taking from the reserve, plus they're increasing their, pretty much all the major tournaments got increased, which was another 150 whatever money. So that's about 300 something million. So it does get to Phil's point that the PGA has reserve and they're not paying their players enough. Now, that's up to the PGA to decide, are we going to keep the nonprofit or are we going to, you know, go for something else? It's not 800 million, but it is more, and still remains to be seen that the PGA is getting some of this money through their future contract deals, TV deals and sponsorship
right.
deals.
Right.
So, you know, who knows? Some of it's they're just getting a loan right now. But I think what I like about it is it's a disruptor. It's somebody saying there is a new way and we can go do different things out there. And if the PGA is the right way, which it's been there forever, they have full competition. I mean, like, there's Jordan Spieth had one, then there's people like everywhere, examples of you're on the Korn Ferry Tour, and like, if you're top 10 in the Korn Ferry Tour, you automatically get your PGA card and get to go somewhere, you know, to the PGA. So you get to play kind of both tournaments. But, like, those good players sometimes get stuck in between, I want to go play a PGA Tour event, maybe for an exemption, but they need to go play the Korn Ferry Tour to make sure that they actually get their card.
Right.
So it's just legitimate straight competition. And there's not the aspect of television and great entertainment.
Yeah.
So that's where it's tough. At least other sports have a little bit of balance, football, basketball, where they know it's like, okay, today we're going to play all our scrubs. Got it. Right. It's a scrub game. It's still competition, but there's still some entertainment to it. I don't know. Maybe the PGA has just gone the full competition for too long that it's actually hurting them. You know, their benefit, the thing that people like the most about the PGA, that you have to earn your card and you have to work your way and it's competition and there's no favoritism, is also the thing that hurts them, because it doesn't bring entertainment value of, well, what if I just want to watch these people at this tournament for this?
Yeah, well, I think there's a level of, you know, like the MLB with it, where it's a long season. I mean, people just don't watch baseball, you know, all season. When I say people, I mean, very, very few people truly watch the whole. It's a long, 162 games, it's a lot of games to watch.
Yep.
So people don't care unless it's a big series or, you know, they get to the playoffs. There's a big aspect of that for the NBA. I mean, really, truthfully, until Christmas, it's, you know, people just don't even talk about it. It's not a thing. Football is the only sport that I think really has it, you know, kind of honed in a good timeline. Golf, it's a long year. So I don't disagree. You know, do you shorten the number of tournaments? No. I mean, I don't think you do. But I think, you know, to your point, you could probably make some, you know, much bigger than others. You don't want to lose the competition aspect of it. I don't. You know, the quote-unquote relegation, you know, if you're a bad golfer, you shouldn't be on the tour, you know, and you're not going to get paid like it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. These people are choosing to play golf for a living. They're choosing to go to the tour. This isn't like some, you know, crappy job that they're in a, you know, tough neighborhood. They're, you know, these guys aren't like forced into this, right? I mean, you 100% choose this route and know what you're getting into. So they can spare me the what is it? Like the misery of playing on the tour. Like, stop it. No. You know what you're getting into before you do this. I don't understand, like, the PGA being the big bad bully in this scenario. I don't get it. All the other sports have some sort of union where the players, you know, basically get together and determine how much of all of the revenue is going to go to them. I don't understand why that can't happen in the PGA. Why did it need to take the LIV to do that? I think that's the one big thing that messed up. And clearly the fact that they're increasing purses this quickly shows, okay, well, probably more money should have been going to the players. I don't have an an issue with the Liv existing, its existence, them doing whatever it is they do. That's fine. I do have an issue with them taking competition from the PGA. I don't understand the end game for Liv. Like, what are they doing it to make a point? They're not doing it for the players to get them more money, right? Because that doesn't make sense. They want them. So I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand where this is going. So my hope is that in the long run, it makes the PGA better, and that it makes for better television for us as viewers. It makes, you know, the tournaments more, viewer friendly,
yeah,
competitive, big names competing. I mean, I can watch golf almost every weekend, but, you know, the major atmosphere is pretty hard to beat, right? If you could do that 8 times a year, that'd be awesome. I don't know. Not a Liv guy yet. I need to see more.
Yeah, I guess you just got to be... The PGA has been slow to change, right? And we're in... If you really want to grow the game, you're in 2022 now. I mean, think of... Baseball's a perfect example. They have grown and changed with pitch clock, replay, right? You could argue that it's slow and that's a dying thing, right? But they've made changes in either bats, you know, in how the bats technology and all this other stuff, right? Football the same way, basketball the same way, right? Basketball, they made the 3-point line, right?
Right.
And all these other things for the way they play the game and tournaments, shot clock. They've done little tweaks here and there, right? What have been, and I'm sure there is, I'm just not versed enough, what have been the tweaks in golf?
There's been a ton.
That they've made.
See, I would say there's been a ton recently.
In the formats, though?
In the introduction of the WGCs, right? That never existed. And so, and I think that the WGCs are essentially the Liv.
Yep.
You know, you have the four majors, which is obviously the top in the world. And then they added 4 WGCs. That's 8 tournaments. That's the Liv. Those are the 8 tournaments of the best golfers currently in the world. Yep. And that's a status entrance. That's not that's not an exhibition. You have to earn your way there. It's the best golfers, and it's a huge purse. They introduced the FedEx Cup playoffs. You know, that was never a thing until 15 years ago or so. I mean, ish, whatever the time frame is. Again, you earn your way there, and you maintain, you know, throughout a couple tournaments, your way to the very last one, and again, to earn a major payday. I think golf has made tremendous strides in, you know, television, the contracts that they do, how they show it. I think, you know, they've made rules changes. I do think it's not like they just sit there and don't do anything. I think their biggest mistake was clearly the compensation for the players. That in my mind, I think that the share and what the players get clearly does not correlate to what it should, based off of these are the guys that are we go to golf tournaments, to TPC, to Bay Hill, to the Master, to whatever it is, we're paying to go see these players. We're not paying for the production, right? You're going to see them perform, so more money should probably be going into their pockets.
Yes, I guess you could say Phil Mickelson is like when he was on the PGA Tour, or Tiger Woods, or Jordan Spieth, because they are so great and people are going to watch them at a random John Deere tournament or Bay Hill or any of that, they're making the number 120th on the tour money.
Correct. Right? That's exactly right.
And they feel that they're like that number 120th would not be anything unless he was playing me, or unless I was there, or people wouldn't be watching or care that, you know, Scott Hadwin or Adam Hadwin or whoever random name wins.
That's right.
The tournament.
That's right.
Right. They care that they lost to Phil Mickelson or Scottie Scheffler or Jordan Spieth.
Right.
So I think Phil's point, while I think Phil had a lot of valid points, I'm sure, you know, however it happened, when you look back on it, is pay the top-end players more. Recognize that your core people who are carrying this game and growing this game are being in a system where it's all competitive, right, and you have to earn your way, there still should be some kind of leeway for saying, yes, I get it for competition, but for viewership, your mega contracts that you're having, you should really pay these guys more. Well, right, the top-end guys more.
I think that happens through multiple mediums. Number one, sponsorships.
Yes,
advertising. These guys get paid a ton. The not the NIL, but what did the PGA introduce last year? Talking about new things that they're doing.
Yeah, Player Impact Program.
Player Impact Program, the PIP. You know, that's literally, you're just paying players to be famous.
And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, Tiger Woods was number one.
Right.
Number two was Phil Mickelson.
Correct.
Number five, Bryson DeChambeau. Number seven, Dustin Johnson. Number eight, Brooks Koepka. So that is, what, 4 out of the top 10 players in the Player Impact Program have gone to the Louvre.
Right. No, absolutely.
And so those are guys that feel that they should be getting more money, you know.
Yeah, but I guess my point is it seems clear the PGA recognized we need to pay these guys more, and they were finding ways to do it. The LIV's whole concept to me seems so ridiculous. And again, I can't make this clear enough. If I'm the players, I get it. I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong. It just, people are making the PGA out to be this like big bad animal. To me, it seems like they've always taken the correct steps to grow the game and to compensate the players. You know, I just don't think there was a large enough share directed to the players. Because, you know, I think, too, though, it's not just golf. Think about, like, if you were to go to a Magic game, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you might know one, maybe two players on the Magic, right? You're probably going to go because the Lakers are in town to see LeBron.
Yeah, or Steph Curry.
Steph Curry or Kevin Durant or whatever. Yeah. It's the same thing there. In most pro sports, like, you know, if you're going to go to a Jags game, right, you're not going to go watch the Jags play. You're going because they're playing the Packers to see Aaron Rodgers, or, you know, a good team. Yeah. Like, it's that whole concept of these top players carrying the league rings true in all sports in every league. And that's not a bad thing. I think you just continue.
But those leagues pay the top players.
Correct. They have.
And they incentivize them more for being the top player.
Absolutely they do. But they also have player unions. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think the players need to get together and kind of, they need to be the ones going to the PGA and be like, screw you guys, we're just not going to play unless you, you know, treat us, quote unquote, fairly. I don't want to, that's such a terrible term too, because what is it, the top, like, you know, 150 players all make $1 million a year or something like that. I mean, it's, I forget the
it's number. 125, and I think it's the lowest guy made in the money list makes like five. No, the 125 guy makes way less than $1 million, right?
Man,
in earnings of that, right? So the disparity is quite a bit.
Yeah.
In that, but I understand what you're saying, though, is of the PGA being the bad, the big bad guy, like, you don't get it. And I guess, in retrospect, they had no chance against Saudis who have deep pockets like that to pay somebody. Right? Like, it was a perfect enemy.
Yeah.
If you want to...
Exactly. And that's not... I mean, and that's what I'm saying. It's what are you supposed to do if you're the PGA? Like, what do you... You know what I'm saying? They're in a no-win situation there. You're competing against, you know, the deepest pockets there are. Also, I'm currently looking at the money list for this year. So this year obviously isn't done. 98 players have over $1 million this year. The top 98. Just for the record. So when we say it's not fair, let's keep things in perspective here.
Right, so the top 125 guys, I think, make the tour.
Yep. Cameron Champ is 125, and he's made $738,000 this year.
But, so that's this, yeah.
And he's played in 15 tournaments, to put that in perspective, okay? 15 tournaments, where that's out of, they've been playing since October. So we'll call it 7 months they've been playing. And he's played 15 tournaments. That's two tournaments a month on average. So, like, the whole schedule thing, I don't know, man. I have a really, really, really difficult time buying into that crap. We're talking about the 125th ranked player this year, 15 tournaments, $738,000.
Last year was $996,000. Francisco Molinari.
At 125?
Yep. The tour average. And maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong on how many people get the tour, because the money list goes all the way down to 250.
Yes, that's correct.
So maybe it's the 250th. So the 250th person for last year made $6,000. Right, the top person made $7.7 million.
Yeah, but those people, like, don't even play.
So the tour average for last year was 1.485.
Okay. I don't know, man. I have a hard time acting like the PGA is this insane grind they're putting the players through.
They can't compete with the money, though. That's the thing. Absolutely. They're not going to be able to compete with the money.
No, they won't. And no matter what and that's the thing, no matter what they end up compensating the players, no matter what share they end up giving them, the Saudis can just say, we're going to do more. We're going to pay more. I don't know how sustainable that is for 5-10 years. I mean, maybe they do just, that's just a hobby that they want to do. But again, so let's say they do. Let's say the LIV sticks around, okay? In 10 years, what's it going to look like? You know, is it going to be just a bunch of exhibition golf? Because if it is, I'm out. That means nothing to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of different factors that go with it. So we'll see.
A lot of unknowns.
A lot of unknowns. We're back. We're done with the golf talk.
Enough Saudi talk.
Let's talk about something in America that we love.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, that's football.
Let's go there.
All right, so college football is about to start. Big news drop today. UCLA, USC are joining the Big Ten.
Yeah.
In 2024.
Yeah.
The same year that Oklahoma and Texas are joining the Big Ten.
SEC.
I mean, SEC.
Correct.
Me.
Yes.
What do we feel about this?
You know, I would say that's probably... Would you say that's the next biggest football school or football program outside of Texas and Oklahoma that can move is USC, right?
I mean Ohio State.
That's not in the SEC and Big Ten currently, to clarify.
Yeah, I guess you could say this, right? Big Ten, SEC are the power conferences, right? They're the most competitive.
Yep.
You have Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin. You know, these are schools that have been – Penn State, sorry. These are schools that have been powerhouses for years, right? People go nuts up there about all this.
Yep.
So I think they've always been safe on that. The AC, they've had parity, right? I guess put it that way. Between Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin – those four teams, right? You kind of had parity, and it's pretty competitive and so forth. I mean, Michigan State even had a couple years where they did well. ACC has been really just riding on Clemson.
Yep.
Train, especially the last few years, but it's always been a Clemson and FSU school, most likely. Conference, excuse me. Most recently, it's been really Clemson that cared. Nobody cared about any of the other teams.
Yeah, I mean, Miami, you would say in the 80s and 90s, but
the last
20 years have been pretty
irrelevant. Say the 2000s, right? Like, the 2000s, Miami
early
was there.
2000s,
but they weren't in the ACC yet.
That's right.
Right, so knock that out and then basically say... In the last
10 years, Clemson's run the ACC. You could make the argument Ohio State's run the Big Ten, honestly.
Well, Michigan State has been in the playoffs up there, right?
Michigan was in last year.
Michigan State's been on a playoff. Ohio State has won a national championship and been in the playoffs. Before they had playoffs, you know, you've had Penn State in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Right, and win that. So they've had good coaches, they've had competition, and different schools do something.
Sure.
Right.
Okay.
So it's been different schools being competitive, which is good.
Right.
ACC, you had one school be competitive.
That's exactly right.
Right. So I mean, every year they would say Clemson just has to go undefeated. If they lose one game, they're not going to be in the playoff because their schedule sucks.
Correct.
In the Big Ten, you could lose a game and still be in there because it's competitive. Pac-12, no. right? Pac-12, you had to win all because they said you're not competitive.
Right.
It's cool. Big 12, maybe. It depends.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've had Oklahoma.
Oklahoma has done
it. They've had losses and have gotten in.
Right. So maybe, but now when you take those out, like, it doesn't matter. So I guess, long story short, Big Ten is really the only other school that I conference that is legitimate. So I see those maybe being the top two. Just go to two conferences and put everybody in.
That was going to be my follow-up question. What do you see happening? So now you'll have the SEC with 16 teams, Big Ten with 16 teams. Clearly, far and away, the two best conferences. Do you then shift to just a 4-16 team conferences where you have the ACC and then whatever becomes of the Big Ten, or excuse me, Big 12 and Pac-12? Is that what happens here, or do you just go to two conferences like the NFL? And I mean, what is it going to look like here?
You could go to two 20-team conferences.
Right.
Right. And if you did that, you would end up pretty close to the top 25 most valuable college football teams in terms of three-year average profit, right, in the last 2 years. So put the ACC and the SEC and put the Big 12 / Pac-12 into the Big Ten.
Right.
Right. So now you would have a Ohio State, Michigan State, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, all those people. You add USC, UCLA, Notre Dame, perhaps, maybe? right, instead of the ACC? At Notre Dame, Oregon, Washington, and Colorado.
Notre Dame always seemed more natural to me to be in the Big Ten than the ACC.
And then in the SEC, you would add, you know, besides the Oklahoma, Texas, you add Florida State, Clemson, Georgia Tech, and UNC.
Right. Not Miami?
Yeah. I guess Miami hasn't really done much to
go into a power conference. I would rather, I'd rather have Miami than Georgia Tech.
Really?
Absolutely. You have the, not just from a program, A, the program's better than Georgia Tech, and B, to have the Miami market and the Miami following, for sure.
Yeah. I say, you know what, at this point, let's make two power conferences, right? And like you were saying for the golf, let's make relegation.
Yeah.
Right? Have two power conferences, and now you play everybody in the conference, right? And you play each other. Any of the cupcake games, like we had talked about, or a spring game or something, is play UCF.
Right.
Right? Play somebody outside of that.
Yeah.
You know, and granted, it's going to stink for like a Georgia Southern or these Eastern Michigans or like these really low schools, right? That
yeah, but does from it that, really change? I mean, does it really change for them?
Like it, money-wise, right? Because UF or these schools will pay them $800,000, $1 million to come play, right? And that makes their entire, like,
sure,
years of athletic donations,
right?
No, so for that reason. But I still think, as a fan, give me a spring game with one of those teams rather than like an orange and blue game.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I would love to see college football shift to where, you know, every single game is a meaningful game, whatever that looks like, whether it's a conference game or you're playing a non-conference equivalent, you know, something of that nature. I'm over the South Central Eastern Washington Eagle games, you know, like I guess to your point, they get paid, the terrible schools get paid, but I don't know, that's not what's making money. Like, just what they should do then is just say, all right, we're going to take, you know, 2% of all revenue, because revenues are going to go through the roof if you do that. They're going to make more money. Give 2% of everything to these quote-unquote D2 schools or smaller schools to survive.
This is kind of what we're talking about for golf, though, too.
Yeah.
Some of the players think. But I don't want to get back to the golf talk.
Yeah. I mean, but I think the relegation's a great idea, truthfully. Because then teams like Vanderbilt, I mean, you're in the SEC. There are better teams that deserve to be there. There are better programs that deserve to be there.
Yep.
If you're going to not win more than two games in a five-year stretch, sorry. You know? I think something like that would be awesome.
I like it. My last point on the USC-UCLA going to the Big Ten is, how upset is Lincoln Riley right now? He left Oklahoma to go to USC because it's an easier conference, right? And he didn't really want to be in the SEC, tougher competition.
Right.
You know, you're going to go to that. So he said, let's go to USC. And now they joined the Big Ten. So now he has to fly, which is stupid, by the way. You're going from California to Michigan. Rutgers is in the Big Ten. He's got to go to, what is it, Padua, New Jersey?
Yeah, but okay, we're acting like they're flying coach like the rest of us and have to go stand in security lines.
But it's the same line that in the NFL, right, when an East Coast team goes to the West Coast or a West Coast team goes to the East Coast, right?
Right.
Prepare the line that Lincoln Riley in the Big Ten is going to say, we had a six-hour flight to New Jersey, Padua, New Jersey, or Pascua, whatever it's called.
Right.
And we lost because our team just wasn't ready. You know, we were still asleep in the long schedule. Well, he loses to Iowa State and crappy teams in the Big 12.
Right.
Right? It's just one more excuse for him when there's more travel. Because, yeah. I mean, just think of a map. USC and UCLA traveling like
yeah, across. But couldn't you use the same argument and say this is going to be a massive benefit for them for all their home games? Because every single team that's coming to them, it's going to be a 3 time zone difference.
Absolutely. Flying to LA.
So, I mean, that can, I don't know, that swings both ways.
I agree.
That's a stupid argument. These are 20-year-old kids that are playing. They'll be just fine.
Do you think Lincoln Riley is upset?
No, because I also think now, if you're Lincoln Riley, you say, okay, well, now I get to recruit in Ohio, in Michigan, in the heart of Big Ten country, because I'm playing, I have games there. So now the Justin Fields, I guess he was Georgia, but you know what I'm saying, these top recruits from Ohio is a great football state, right? They can have them come to their games when they go to Ohio. They can recruit there. Before, they're not recruiting in Ohio, right? That opens up a brand new opportunity for
them. It also opens up Ohio State people to take more. I mean, they already take people outside, but even more in California.
For sure. It swings both
ways. It's a win-win.
I don't know why it would be a... Well, I shouldn't say I don't know why. I understand why it could be a bad thing when you say, all right, well, now we're going to stiffer competition. But this is just more exposure, more primetime games. I think this is a good thing. Yep. I'd be fired up if I was Lincoln Riley.
All right. All right, Kyle, so let's go to the lightning round. Why don't you hit me up with...
Well, while we're on college football, yep, let's talk about our Gators real
quick. Let's talk about it.
Because recently, your boy Napier has been just getting drilled, mm-hmm. I feel like. He was brought on to be this phenomenal recruiter, great program builder, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the recruits have not lived up to the expectations thus far. My question to you is, do you care at this point? Does it mean anything at this point? And if so, how much emphasis do we need to be putting on it?
Yeah, so my big thing are, and we talked about this, how I was going to judge him was his recruiting class, right? Everything, the numbers and everything has shown that your year two, right, has to be a good bump class. You have to have a top five, top three, whatever class. And that's where you have to get all SEC people and be really, really good.
Right.
And that studies show that your class is pretty much intact by August.
Correct.
So before you kick off, like, your season, your first year, like, pretty much all your recruits, wherever you are in recruiting there, you may go up and down some, but it's not going to be enough. If you're not in the top five, it's not like you're just automatically going to be there.
Right.
So if I judge him based off that, like I said, I would, he's not going to make it. Right. He's not been getting recruits. His recruiting class isn't great. He's got an interest from a lot of 5-star recruits and had them all on campus, right? So I'll give him credit for that a lot more have come, but he hasn't closed. And at this point, I don't see a shot that there's a top 5 class or any of those criteria. So it's kind of like, well, that stinks.
Well, so to your point, the bump class, so not this year's class, yeah, but next year's class.
2023 class.
2023. Gators currently ranked 37 in the nation. Here's some notable schools they are ranked behind.
But, I mean, there's the rankings, I don't care right now, because it's also based off how many recruits they have, right? The numbers.
True, but you would say probably half of their class is filled, right? If there's 9-10 recruits, I mean, that's half a recruiting class. 9 to 13-ish is what you're looking at. Here's some notable schools ahead of the Gators at this time.
Tennessee, I'm sure.
South Carolina, SMU, Boston College, Rutgers, Colorado, Duke. It's really, really bad. Now, granted, Alabama's 19. I mean, it's too early.
But that's I guess that's my point, right? If you look at the blue chip athletes left, the 4 and 5 star athletes left, there's not that many. Those are the ones that can swing the class from a, like you said, Alabama 19 to a 8,
right,
or a 5, pretty easily.
1 5-star can bump it.
But he can't. But going from, if you're already in the 30s, that's not good.
Correct.
You know, and also it's not good because the amount of 4 and 5 stars are limited. So now you're competing against those other schools.
Yeah, the top schools.
The top schools, yeah, who are trying to go from a 19 to a 5.
Right.
Or a 19 to the top 10.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So that's where I get concerned, and I don't have a lot of confidence that. So the criteria that I was going to judge him at is already failing, is what I'll say.
Yeah. I still am going back to my original thoughts. Like, let's watch us play, and then I'll make my judgment, I guess. But what everybody was raving about before, he hasn't lived up to. So I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
Yeah. All right. So, Kyle, let's switch sports here. It's not the Saudis, but let's talk about Qatar.
Let's.
World Cup.
Yeah.
Is coming up.
Yeah.
In November.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it got me pumped up because I saw that. The field is set for Qatar, and they recently sold $1.8 million worth of tickets.
Uh-huh.
Pretty sweet. I mean, you know, awesome. Here's the other thing that pumped me up. So obviously, think of this schedule. I forgot that the World Cup is in November.
Yeah.
Kind of time frame, right?
Too hot in the summer.
Too hot in Qatar.
Yep.
Think of this schedule. November 24th, Thanksgiving Day. November 25th, USA plays England,
yeah,
in the World Cup.
Yeah.
November 26th, College Football Rivalry Week.
Yeah.
How pumped up are you for the World Cup
in
this time frame?
The best weekend of sports. I mean, because Thanksgiving, right, you get your typical NFL games,
yep,
you know, you're eating your face off, consuming way too much. Friday, you don't, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
Thursday is always a long day, like, you don't want to do anything. Now you have the freaking World Cup, and not just the World Cup, against England. Like,
the Brits.
The soccer gods are looking out for us. And
what a Friday, right?
What a Friday. We're talking about
what a day after Thanksgiving.
The Pilgrims celebrating with the Indians. And then the next day, boom, we're going to crush England. I mean, that is as American as it gets. And then football the rest of the weekend. I mean,
I may have to take off the next week.
To recover?
Just to be, because I'm so pumped up.
The Monday after, just to rest and relax. Oh, my goodness. It's awesome.
But I am fired up that there's World Cup in the fall.
Yeah.
During football season.
Yeah.
It's going to be an exciting time.
It will be. We're obviously going to be having a party for that. I mean, I would assume.
We're obviously going to win the World Cup.
Well, that's a given.
All right. We won't go predictions. I won't do predictions right now for World Cup. We'll save that. We'll save
get there.
That
we got a long way to go.
Okay.
There's still a lot. We've got a long way.
Those 3 days are going to be.
It's going to be wild.
One of the best 3 days of the year.
It's going to be a fun weekend, no doubt. So we're going to have to get rowdy. We're going to have to do a pod that week sometime,
yeah,
you know, around that. So
we have to go to Qatar. Maybe we can get some tickets.
Have you seen the rules over there, man? There's some wild rules that I'm fairly confident if these young, like, 22-year-olds, they can get in trouble.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, there's
not a lot of forgiveness.
We don't need to go into it, but I would encourage anybody listening, check out the laws in Qatar, especially the unwed laws, if you will. see what happens. See what happens if you get frisky over there.
Yeah. You know, it's always fine to watch it at home. Be responsible.
Well, don't worry. I will.
Okay.
We'll be watching it from Florida.
All right, Kyle, what else you got for me?
So, last question that I have for you tonight will be, I'm curious, we've got the British Open coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
the Open, it's called.
I know, but I'm going to call it the British Open because that's what it is. Because
we're going to play USA England. We're going to play England soon.
Right, so. I'm going to talk crap up against the Brits and England until the game.
Yeah.
So the British Open's coming up. And man, I got to tell you, I do love waking up early in the morning and being able to watch major golf, you know.
Love it.
Do your workout, it's on. Even on the weekends, it's on early. We do our, you know,
cook
brunch.
Cook some eggs.
Have some coffee, some mimosas, some bloodies. Watch it. It's great, right? But we've also been fortunate to have, like, you know, U.S. Opens in prime time, you know, at night, whatever. And I know we've talked about this before, but I've got to ask. I know what your favorite major is. We can all say the Masters, certainly. But after the Masters, what is your favorite major?
You know, immediately I would say the Open because of the morning time frame, you know, and just the feel around it. But it is tougher to watch and get into it because it is the morning.
Right.
Right. And so it's a little bit tough. I mean, Sunday, I feel like I watch, but I don't know. I think the idea of it, it's great. And the first couple hours, maybe till 8 or 9, but then it's tough to really watch the golf and get everything. For me, I think I like, I'll go U.S. Open. Sometimes because the U.S. Open's prime time.
Right.
Right. And U.S. Open's always Father's Day weekend.
Yep.
Right. Yep. If it's not the Masters, Father's Day weekend. What a better time.
Yep. Yeah, I think I'm with you too. I do. It's the national championship of golf. Visually, it's much more fun to watch. The courses are way better viewing. The British Open, while, I mean, they're awesome. The courses they play are awesome. I would say when you're watching it on TV, probably just not as visually good as...
appealing.
Visually appealing. Yeah. When it looks like they're playing in a bunch of pastures, it doesn't do well on TV, I think. The Saturday is always difficult for the British Open because, you know, most people, you get up in the morning, you're productive early in the day, right? That's when... you know, especially with kids and what you're doing stuff, you're on the move in the morning. It's easier to sit on the couch in the afternoon, lay down, watch some golf, right?
Yep.
You might doze off for a minute. You might have some beers. You might, you know, do whatever. So it's easier to do that. So, the 4 days of it. See, the Thursday and Friday the British Open is great because again, you can wake up early during the week, do your thing, watch it, have it on at the office, like. It's great. And then Sunday, I love it. I love it on Sunday because that's, you base your day around it.
Right.
The Saturday, though, is, it's just tough.
Yeah.
Right?
It's tough and to actually, like, watch the golf. Like, But I feel like the U.S. Open, you know, Sunday, you can pretty much follow the golf, right? It's in the afternoon.
For sure.
If it's normal time or prime time, whichever, you can follow, like, from the leaders and watch a full 18 for 4.5 hours there and really feel like, man, that was some good cinematic TV sports watching.
Agreed.
It's tough. I don't think I've ever thought that or said that for an Open.
Yeah, at
11:30 when it's over or 12.
Right.
Although when Tiger was close a couple years back in 2018, I think.
Yeah.
It was
Molinari.
Exciting. Yeah, that was as exciting as it gets.
Yeah, that was fun. You guys actually hosted a brunch that Sunday. It was great day.
Yeah.
It was a great. We had a blast.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. And it's always during the summer. Too, you know, it's like you're in the middle of summer, which, you know, I have memories growing up, like we'd be traveling, but we'd you know, wake up and watch the British Open, you know, at a great aunt's house, you know, yeah, or whatever. I always feel like you end up watching the British Open with other people. You're never watching at home by yourself on the couch. It's either at a party or with family or whatever. It's yeah, it always feels like more of a social gathering.
Yeah, the idea of the Open, the British Open, and the gathering, it's good. The other, outside of the Masters, the PGA US Open, it's more of a, I want to sit down and watch the golf.
Yep.
And you could watch it by yourself or you could watch it with other people. You don't really care.
Right.
Right. But you're going to watch it.
Yes.
The British Open is more, besides Thursday. I mean, yeah, Thursday, Friday, you're like, I want to watch it at work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And do that. That's good. All right. So I got my last thing that I got for you before we wrap up. The NFL has changed sponsors, the official sponsor. I don't know if you knew that.
Who was the official sponsor?
The official sponsor of the NFL was Pizza Hut.
It was one of their
pizza sponsors.
That would have been guess
they
number
have, I mean, they have Verizon.
137.
They have Verizon, too, I think.
Okay.
But the NFL has gone away from Pizza Hut as their sponsor. Can you tell me who they went to?
Oh, man. Well, I would have to say it's probably some newer tech company, if I had to guess. And that's, am I on the right track?
No, it's a pizza company. I'm just saying, which pizza company?
Oh, think it's a pizza. Yeah. So it's the official pizza company of the NFL. Yeah. Well, it's not going to be Papa John's. It's clearly not Pizza Hut. So that leaves, what, Domino's and Little Caesars? So I'll go with Domino's.
Little Caesars. Little Caesars is now announces the new official pizza sponsor.
Okay.
For the NFL. It's the third largest chain in the world.
It's Hot the and third ready. Largest chain in the world.
Yes. Hot and Ready Pizza.
So behind Pizza Hut and Domino's, I would assume.
Something like that, right? When was the last time you had a Little Caesars pizza?
Oh, my Lord.
Is it more than 5 years?
Yes.
Less than 20?
I honestly don't know how to answer that question. I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not a big thing. It just shocked me. Like, Pizza Hut, I can remember that I've had pizza. We've been to Pizza Hut buffets. Yeah, you know, here and there. But do people actually say, I want Little Caesars pizza?
Well, apparently, if it's the third largest chain in the world. I don't know a single human being that's ordered a Little Caesars pizza.
Like, the NFL, Little Caesars. Just get ready for the commercials. That's all I'm saying. Maybe it'll change your mind when you're watching the Jags play.
Well,
picture this Sunday afternoon. You've done all your stuff.
Because I watching need something else to make me throw up.
You're watching the Jags, your Jags.
Ugh.
Versus Tom Brady and the Bucks.
Well, you know what's gonna happen now.
You're gonna get some
Little Caesars. Well, now we gotta order some Little Caesars pizza.
We might have to pod and eat Little Caesar and have Little Caesars in pot.
We have to. We don't have a choice.
This is called research.
Yep.
For our fans.
Yep.
We don't want to do this.
No.
I feel like we have to do this.
We started the pod opening. We're doing it for the listeners. We're going to end it with, we're going to do this for you.
Every decision we make is for the listeners.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to be the next pod that we do, if it's going to be the first football one that we do. But we're going to have Little Caesars.
And it's obviously, we have to get the Hot and Ready, though, right? Like,
is the Hot and Ready the one with, like, the nacho cheese? Because I'm out if we're doing that.
No, just Hot and Ready is literally, like, you walk to Little Caesars and the pizza's already made.
Okay.
So that's what I thought.
It's just, like, microwave pizza.
No. I think that's their gimmick thing. Of Little Caesars is they just keep making pizzas and put it on this like warmer convection thing or whatever, and people walk in and say, oh, well, I wanted a pepperoni, but there's this pineapple pizza here, so I'll just grab that because it's already ready.
It's hot and ready to go.
It's hot and ready to go.
So that makes me think of, like, gas station food, like the hot dogs on the rollers.
Kind of.
Which
I'm But I also for. Think you can... I don't know if you can even get delivery for Little Caesars. See, I don't know.
Right?
We've got to do a lot of research on this.
They've got to deliver. Or do we go pick up a hot and ready? I don't know, man. There's so many options.
If any of our listeners know anything about Little Caesars, could you guys just...
We need some
call
feedback.
In and or just let us know.
Yeah. And do they have cheesy bread?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm here for the cheesy bread. All right. We got to do some research. Little Caesars. Rock and roll.
Official pizza of the NFL. Just remember that.
Okay.
The official pizza
of the
NFL. I'm
sure we'll see a million commercials for it. It'll be hard to forget. Although I thought I would have seen a million commercials for Pizza Hut. Maybe I did. Craig Robinson was on all the Pizza Hut commercials. He became like the spokesman for him, which I love him. He's great.
Good guy.
Yep.
All right. So we're good. That's all the time we have for this pod. We'll see you soon. It's summer months. We're getting after it.
Yep. Let's do it.
Until next time.
Until next time.